We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson of Baltimore. We are Baltimore Positive, and we are positively into a Memorial Day week and fun around here in lots and lots of ways. Watching some baseball. We had lacrosse going on over the weekend. My heartfelt apologies to all the Maryland fans out there. But I do know some Cornell people, so they're all happy. Let them win. We win enough around here. We had a strange a death in the Baltimore vernacular last week, the loss of Jim Irsay. And I realize many in our audience do not share any affinity for Jim Irsay or have spent any time with him. I have reached to people who did know Jim Irsay and know him well. Clark Judge joined me. We did about an hour of memories going back to Clark's days of covering the Baltimore Colts. This guy and I've gotten to know each other in his time in Indianapolis. He's been there a couple of decades, chronicling all things Colts, but was not there in 1984. And Bob Kravitz has worked in other markets, and including Denver and other places. Bob, were you in Cincinnati too? You were in other places, I know.
I was an intern in Cincinnati. I worked in Pittsburgh. I worked in San Diego for about 10 minutes. I've been
Okay.
all over the damn place.
But Indianapolis is what sort of you're known for. And as Chuck Pagano comes back to Baltimore this year and Deflategate and all of that, and your involvement and all of that nonsense with Tom Brady and being a journalist in Indiana for so many years, you got a different version of Jim Irsay, right? And Clark bared his soul to me about how he never wanted to think about Irsay, speak of Irsay. The loss of the franchise chased him to San Diego and San Francisco, changed his life that the Colts left Baltimore. And then he found himself later in life really taking a liking to Jim, as did I over the last 20 years. And I think you know that. And sort of my famous putting down the sword the week of the Super Bowl in 2009 or whatever that was, out in Indianapolis. No, it was 2012 was your Super Bowl, right?
2012, yes.
12, right. I wrote a piece that had a million views in Indiana the week I was there, just about like I did not want to carry that hatred any longer. So I guess I gave the hatred up 14 years ago. I befriended Jim Irsay along the way. I went to his rock and roll exhibition in New York. And so I, as Jim leaves the planet, I need to talk to people like you in Indianapolis who have seen what he has done for your community. And I'm not going to bring everybody on. And I did air the 125-minute piece that I sat with Jim the one time in my life we sat on the record and chatted, which I never released until last week, about leadership. And but I'm a little busted up that I'm never going to have a chance to talk music anymore to Jim, you know?
I'll tell you what, I was gutted when we all knew this day was going to come sooner rather than later. I mean, obviously, his day was going to come, but living the life that he led and his addiction issues, we all knew that this day was going to come, but that made it no less gutting. He was not a great owner in the sense that he just let the football people do the football stuff. He got a little too involved at times. We saw that a couple of years ago when he fired Frank Reich and insisted, really mandated that Sam Ehlinger start. But I'm telling you, man, his spirit of generosity in this town, and it's not just handing out $100 bills at training camp. I'll just give you a quick story. I wrote a piece about a young man who had cancer, who was Marion University's kind of their guy. He was their cheerleader. He was the guy who went to all the games and he was in the locker room and everything. And they were playing a national championship game down in Daytona. This is Marion University, and I wrote about it, and he couldn't go because of his health situation. Well, Jim saw the story and immediately called and made his plane available for the young man and his family, and they went down to Daytona and they watched the game on Jim Irsay. And that's something he did constantly. He'd read stuff in the paper. He'd hear stuff on the radio, and he would act upon it in the most generous manner you can imagine.
I don't know what else can you say about a guy that, other than that, who inherited this wealth through his father's good fortune of having bought the team, flipped the team, moved the team, milked the team,
No doubt.
wrecked the team, wrecked the family reputation and the last name, that he decided he wasn't going to be like that. And Bob,
Exactly.
I'll say this. I'm a Baltimore kid, right? And I was at the paper in 84, at the News American in March of 84. Then I worked at the Evening Sun all during the Herb Bell grab. We're trying to get a team back. As I can hold up my St. Louis Cardinals. We tried to steal this team. We tried to steal all sorts of teams. We tried to steal this team. Peter Angelos thought he had this team, right?
Really?
And we went, we so I'm collecting these old 1970s belt buckles because I have a Baltimore Colts one. And everyone would say in the late 80s, Jim Irsay's different. And people knew Jim Irsay around town because he was a young guy. He was always sort of banging around Goucher and where they trained and what they were. And people knew him. Even Ernie Accorsi, who I knew, would say Jim's
Yeah.
different. Bruce Laird, the players that had befriended him, even though his old man was drunk and crazy and moved the team, they kept these relationships with him. And I never knew much. And obviously, we celebrated the death of Bob Irsay here. I'm not proud of that, but we did it. It's on the record in the late 90s. We got our own team. And at some point, we won the Super Bowl in 01. And Bisciotti bought the team. And Bisciotti took me under wing because Bisciotti got a lot of pushback. And I'm talking 04, 5, 6, 7. Bisciotti moving into the Modell seat at that point, it was about the Colt records. It was about our fans having now won a Super Bowl, Ray Lewis, that Ray Lewis wasn't connected and John Ogden weren't connected to Johnny U in the Football Hall of Fame. That in order to see Johnny U and Lenny Moore and Art Don, see any of that, you had to go to the Indianapolis Colts wing in Canton. And this is
Right.
before they put all the money into it and did all that they've done with the league over the last 20 years. So this complaint was very common for Bisciotti when he's drinking down in College Park out amongst Ravens fans. And he was out. Now, Steve's been hiding for well over a decade, took my press. It's like all of this Justin talk, everything in the aftermath of Ray Rice changed Steve in a dramatic way. But Steve cared so much. That was the one complaint that Steve wanted to, as a Colts fan himself and a guy who went out to Western Maryland, had Johnny U sign an autograph. So Steve grabbed me at the owners' meetings and said, "I want you to take a walk with Jim Irsay and I and talk about the records and how maybe that Steve wanted to do that for the
Talk
Baltimore
again.
fans." So we went for this walk at the Biltmore, and before we went for the walk, Steve said to me, "Look, man, Jim Irsay's a real slow, kinesthetic, thoughtful guy. You need to match his heartbeat a little bit when we talk to Jim."
That's
So we went for
interesting.
this walk with cigars. I'm not a cigar smoker, but it was at the Biltmore. I know you've been there in Arizona, and we did a good hour sitting out on this for just us. There was nobody came near us, walk, just the three of us talking about the Colts records. And Steve said to Jim, "It's kind of like after divorce, where does the family sit in the church pews at the wedding?" For like, so he was trying to like frame this thing up, and I didn't talk about it at all at the time. I've talked about it a little bit over the last decade, especially since Bisciotti took my press pass and the sleaze of all of that's gone on with the Ravens over the last 10, 12 years. But the Irsay thing to me, after that moment, Jim would never not see me and say Baltimore guy or come up to me, but we would talk Beatles, we talk Tom Petty, we talk music. He and Pete Ward invited me to New York, but all of that, with Jim was so magnanimous in that hour to say, "I would do anything to change this. You want Johnny U's records? They should be in Baltimore's side." This is what Jim's saying. He said, "But I can't affect the Hall of Fame, and I can't change that the Mayflowers moved it, and I can't tell the Hall of Fame what to do with franchises. But my God, yeah, if it made it things right in Baltimore to put Johnny U's records next to Ray Lewis, I would do that." Jim Irsay said that to me, right?
I
Now,
believe it.
well, we never changed anything, but we tried like hell, and it frustrated Steve to no end. It really did. But there, because Jim had already won a Super Bowl at that point, had already had all of, let's start the Colts records in 84. Like, Jim was okay with all of that. But Jim, to me, was this guy always trying to make things right because he
Right.
knew he didn't besmirch his dad or the I don't remember him saying anything really negative about his dad,
No.
but he carried it, man. It's his
Oh, there's no
to the
doubt.
end, right?
There's no doubt. I mean, he said this to me. If he said it once, he said it 1,000 times. He said, "My father was a brilliant man. He was a very sick man, and I do not want to be my father." And in some ways, he was not, because he was, generally speaking, an owner who cared about winning. And was willing to do whatever it took to win. And at the same time, he had his father's addictive personality, had that illness, and never was able to outrun it. I mean, he was having problems as recently as 2 years ago. So, gosh, I saw him just a couple of months ago, and I remember telling my wife, "My God, we're the same age, and I don't take care of myself at all." And he looks
You still play
significant.
hockey, Bob. I know
No,
you
I
do,
don't play
right?
hockey anymore. That's why you have the picture in the corner. That's the actual body. Because I can't figure out how to turn my camera on. Dope. The Jim just he respected his father, but he didn't want to be his father. And it's going to be interesting to see how Carly handles this. Carly Ursay Gordon, she's going to
See,
be the,
can you explain to me? Because I wonder who owns the Colts now. I really did wonder that because
yeah.
I don't
Well,
know.
the girls, the three girls,
The
are the what's that?
daughters,
The
correct?
daughters. Yes. The three daughters own the team. Carly has been deeply involved in this franchise for many years. She's only 44, but like her father, she kind of grew up at the bottom of the organization. You see her during games on the sideline with a headset. You see her at practice with a notepad. I have talked with former Colt executives who say have nothing but great things to say about Carly Ursay Gordon. They say she's going to be very sharp, and I think in some ways she may end up being a better owner than her father, because if we're being completely honest, and God rest his soul, Jim was not a great owner in the last couple of years. And I think that's reflected in the fact that the Indianapolis Colts haven't won an AFC South in 10 years.
Bob Kravitz is here. He is a venerable Indianapolis sage, even though he is not a native or, but he's been there. When did you arrive?
2000.
So you arrived right when Peyton Manning got there, kind
Pretty
of, sort of, right?
much, yeah. I was the player to be named later.
What did you know about Jim Irsay? And give you a little bit of your background, because I mean, everybody knows last 25 years you've been in Indianapolis, but like you were sort of a traveling what I wanted to be, an Oscar Madison. You were
Yeah.
a writer for hire. You were a sports reporter. You were a columnist. You were a sage. You were tough. You could cover all four sports. You wore a hockey mask. But like, I know of you through Indianapolis, and I know of you through football and the NFL and Deflategate and covering the Colts, but you covered a lot of other things. I mean, to think that you would be tied to Indianapolis and the Irsay family, probably not something you would have thought if I
No.
had met you at a 1995 World Series game, right?
No. I didn't think I'd be in a non-hockey town, to be honest with you. I mean, 'cause hockey is my passion. But, Jim, I knew that Jim was different. I had heard he was kind of a flower child. But I heard that you didn't know what you were going to get when you sat down with Jim. Because you didn't know if he was altered in any way, shape, or form. And quite honestly, in 2000, he was in a bad way. And the first couple of times I met him, I thought he was I thought he was in trouble, to be perfectly honest with you. I thought he was in trouble. He did go for rehab a number of times, and he was in and out and up and down, and you never really knew. But as he sobered up, and I got to know him, and we both love counterculture. We both love rock and roll. We both love Texas blues. We both love history. And He started inviting me to his museum, his artifacts and everything else. I'm sure you've seen that. Used to go to the rock and roll concert that he would give to the city as kind of a gift back to the city the day before opening day. And we just got to know each other on a personal level. He knew, and I made it clear to him that back in my, I would tell him, back in my day, I drank a little bit. He said, "Son, I've spilled more than you drank." I was like, "Okay, all right,
Yeah,
okay."
I mean the reputation and his demons and who he was. I mean, that night in New York 3 years ago, Clark Judge, he and I talked at length about it, but the band and Mike Mills and Kenny Wayne
Oh, it's great.
Shepherd and him singing,
Buddy
Tom
Guy.
Petty singing Something Big on stage with the cowboy hat.
Yeah.
Goodell was there. They're raising money, but the background for all of that and that incredible night I had, and even all the guitars and the Hunter S. Thompson burning a
Yeah.
joint in the Cadillac, and like all the stuff that he has there, the Kerouac manuscript, just all of it. The mental health thing and the stigma part of
Yes.
his thoughts that he knew he was a little different, he knew his life was very different, and he was a unique cat, and he would appreciate that I called him a cat, right? Like
Yeah,
he
yeah.
really was. And I don't, and I think some people were humored by him. Some people didn't know how to like get at him in some way. But man, I got him in a way
I did
that I,
too.
as a Baltimore guy who hated everything about Irsay and the legend of Irsay, it changed me. You know what I mean? Like knowing him a
Yeah.
little bit and talking to him changed me. And every time I ran into him, I would leave with a smile and I'd say to my wife, how can I hate these people?
Right.
I don't think you could, but I do think that there's a feeling of here's a guy who's a billionaire and all he's dead now, but you almost, he was like a child, a man child who was given this Disney thing and had to care for it. And by and large, did a pretty
Did a
good
good
job.
job.
Did a
Did a
pretty good
pretty good
job.
job. You
Yeah.
know, I mean, he, like I say, he learned a lot from his father on what not to do in terms of getting too involved in the process. You mentioned the mental health piece of this. I think of all the things that Jim Irsay has done in his life, that will be the most important thing. I can't tell you the number of people who have been able to get treatment in this town and around the country because of Jim Irsay, because of the money they've put in and continued to put in. I think that will be the most important part of his legacy. Yes, the Super Bowl is great. It's to his dying day, it killed him that they didn't win two or more, which I really think they could have, but for that damn Tom Brady and Drew Brees. He was just I mean, can you just imagine Robert Kraft getting up and singing Lawyers, Guns, and Money in front of 70,000 people? And that was Jim. Jim was a flower child. I think we got each other. We both had our moments of stupidity, and unfortunately, Jim never quite outran it. It's a terrible disease, and I think it's incredibly important what Jim has done to destigmatize mental illness.
Well, I'm here to lift his name today in his honor and the dignity and respect that he treated me with, and that collection of stuff that he put together. It was in that little museum across from the Marriott during like Super Bowl week a dozen years ago. And it traveled around, and Jim would travel it around and hire. Like the night I was there was Natalie Merchant was the singer in New York. I
Yes.
feel bad that I didn't see the Ann Wilson one. I know that there were other Mellencamp, different people that he sort of vagabonded and did this traveling show. And it was his goal to take it kind of everywhere. He took it to Chicago, took it to big cities. And now he's gone. I don't, what do you have any idea what happened to that stuff? Because people have asked me about, like, could they see it? And I'm like, it's an amazing Smithsonian sort of
It really
collection.
is.
of stuff. It's
They will
just not the Hard
continue.
Rock Cafe. This is different.
This is different. They will continue. I talked to Larry Hall just to send him my condolences. I don't know if you remember Larry, he's a ticket guy back in Baltimore, but he said they will continue, rolling it around the country. And that's the thing with Jim. It wasn't just so he could be selfish and say, look, I own Jerry Garcia's guitar. He wanted to share the joy of all these artifacts with the city of Indianapolis and with the country at large. And that was Jim. He was just his spirit of generosity and his desire to reach out to people on a personal human level was unmatched. And you don't he was like a little kid with all these toys. And but he's a great caretaker, just as he was a caretaker for the Indianapolis Colts. He's a caretaker for all of these artifacts.
Bob Kravitz is my guest. He is in Indianapolis. It used to be a four-letter word around here, Indy. But we still we won two Super Bowls, and he only won one. And if I see him at the Pearly Gates, I'll remind him of that. Through all of this, but the legacy and all the stuff that's going on, and all the artifacts and all that, the football goes on, right? And
It does.
the franchise is certainly in the city. I mean, I always think about that when I come there. And that was where my heart was back in 2011 and 12 when I came in for your Super Bowl and said, you know, Irsay stole our team. He broke our heart. He did all this. But look at what he did for Indiana.
Oh,
And
it's
I think
incredible.
that to me, 40 years later, that allows me, as well as the fact that the Ravens were made whole and my community was made whole at one point, it really is that part of that legacy of what this dastardly deed his dad did that he turned it into, and I called it a flower. I called it a flower. It's amazing you call him a flower child. I remember I referred to it as this flower that was blooming in the Midwest.
It's funny you compare him. I've met some of the other owners, and one of the things about Jim is he was a football guy. And most of the owners, you look at their teams and they're just part of a larger business portfolio. And but you look at Jim, and I mean, he grew up washing jock straps. I'm not saying that he wasn't filthy rich. But he grew up, grabbing waters or Gatorades for Johnny Unitas. And that's what Carly Irsay Gordon is doing or has done. He was a football guy. He understood it. If you talk to Bill Polian, if you talk to Ryan Grigson, they'll tell you that he really knows football in ways that no other owner really understands the game at a granular level.
I'd never heard anybody say that about him, but that goes without saying. When I sat and talked leadership with him, and Pete Ward set this up, I believe it was just in 2010 that I sat with him down in Orlando, and I made a video, but the video camera's only on him, not on us. And my wife was like sort of holding the camera from us. But I was doing a book on Baltimore sports leadership, and he agreed to sit with me and talk about where he got his leadership. I mean, he had just won the Super Bowl, right? So I sat with him, and the first things, and I put it up for the first time last week. It's literally just been on a hard drive for 15 years. I never unearthed it. I never used it. I never wrote the book. I have a bunch of videos of Jack Del Rio and a whole bunch of different people from that era. And I pulled it up and I put it in the transcription and I looked at it and I thought, I'm going to air this because it's amazing. The first things he talked about, and he was so excited to talk to me about it, was Ted Marchibroda, Joe Thomas, things he learned when he was a boy, things that he learned from Frank Cush, things that he like just all of that. Even his dad, he referred to his dad, but like he ran a multi-billion-dollar company for the last 40 years as a drug addict that was given to him. He had no qualification to do any of it. And more than that, while Jack Kent Cook's kids lost the team and Dan Snyder wealthed his way in and effed it all up, and all of these families lost, the Modell family lost control of the business. His family's now third generation into it, right? Like
That's right.
they've really, there has been a part of leadership there. You'd yuck and say, funny guy with the cowboy hat singing Tom Petty songs and so broken down and weird gravelly voice and all of that. I don't know. There's some genius in there, Kravitz. There really was.
He was a very, very smart guy. Like me, he had a hard time sometimes articulating it, but very, very deep thinker, voracious reader. It's funny to me, or it's weird to me that there's this feeling about Ursa in Baltimore, which is obviously totally understandable, and yet the people in Washington have a debt to pay to Ursa for saying what he said about Dan Snyder,
Sure.
right?
That was a bold, courageous,
Yes, it was.
billionaires don't come out like that. I mean,
They don't.
I got Rubenstein here who got thrown out of the Kennedy Center by Schindler and can't even speak out. That might not have been a good thing,
Right,
So,
right.
these billionaires are as cowardly in a general sense and a stick togetherness even when they know they're wrong that Jim didn't walk that walk at the end.
Jim did not.
And I said to Clark last week, I said, "Hey man, the last thing that he did in his life that had a bang and a pop and a quote was standing up for those women in Washington."
Absolutely. 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 And it surprised me, to be honest with you. I remember watching SportsCenter, and there he was, and I was like, what has gotten into Jim? Because Jim was a go along to get along guy. He definitely had he played an important role in the NFL. He was the longest tenured owner, or one of the longest tenured owners in the league. But he wasn't a guy who stepped out of tune, when it came to NFL business. And that time he did. And I
It
guess
tells
he
you how
just,
wrong he thought it was.
that exactly right. That's exactly right.
Well, Bob Kravitz is here. I like talking good about Jim Irsay on the Baltimore Airways because he deserved that. And
Absolutely.
I saw some disparaging remarks last week, and I would hope, and I say this to everyone, Bob, because everyone likes my son more than me. I
Yeah.
say, don't blame my son for my stuff.
That's
So
exactly right. That's
don't blame
exactly
me for my
right.
father. I was a better guy than my father, believe me.
Right.
My real father, trust me. I worked hard at that. So I think we've all worked hard to be better than our parents, and I think Jim Irsay is a shining example of that, literally, right?
Yeah. I would agree completely. I mean, sometimes you learn more from other people's mistakes than you do their successes. And I think he saw the way his father had comported himself. I mean, the stories, Rick Venturi, I assume pretty well. And the stories that Rick tells, I mean, the old man Ursay would come in around after lunch, after a couple of cocktails, and fire everybody. And by 4 o'clock, he had no memory of having fired anybody. So, it was really important to Jim. I guess you could say he was a functional addict, if there is such a thing. I mean, he got the job done, but obviously he had more than his unfair share of issues.
All right, Bob. So your homework and the last parting shot for you with Jim Irsay is I found that night in 2022 that he and Pete Ward invited me up to New York. I did not take my wife, and I told my wife was offered to come. She had a family thing, didn't go along with me. And when I came home, she said, "How was it?" I'm like, "You really missed. You screwed this one up. This was
Yeah.
one you should have gone to."
Yeah.
And but the concert was amazing.
Amazing.
Natalie Merchant got snippy with the crowd because they weren't paying attention to her. And then they had a press conference. And then Mike Mills and the band did "Don't Go Back to Rockville." I mean, it was insane.
Yeah.
But then Jim got up and sang, and I'm like, "He's going to sing?" Yeah, he did "Lawyers, Guns, and Money." But
Lawyers.
you'll appreciate this. Since Jim died, and as we record, it's been about a week since Jim died. I found the video that I shot up against the stage of him sitting in the chair singing Tom Petty's, not a hit song, a song called "Something Big."
Yes.
Great, great song, downbeat song, kind of dark, kind of ominous, mid-range Petty, and he's sitting smoking a cigarette, singing something big. And I have the video. I put it up on my Facebook. Go watch it. It'll make you
All
want to
right.
listen to Tom Petty, if nothing
All
else.
right. Sounds good. I always want to listen to Tom Petty.
Well,
Bless his
absolutely. I
soul.
always want to talk sports with you. Bob, put the mask. Are you playing any air hockey, any bubble hockey, any hockey at all? No
No,
hockey.
nothing, nothing. I am completely retired. giving away my equipment 10 years ago was one of the most painful ordeals ever. But no more big five holes on this guy. I'm done giving up bad goals.
All right. Well, you know, we could. I'm telling you, move on to air hockey, move on to video game hockey, do something like that, or just
Hey,
the Stanley Cup Finals. They name the watchers.
I'm at the pickleball age. Are you kidding me?
That didn't happen to me yet. That ain't gonna happen to me yet. I'm gonna keep away from that. I am on the hot yoga mat. Everyone knows that. My thanks to our friends at Planet Fitness for keeping me in shape. Kravitz is so out of shape he can't figure out how to work his camera. But
Can't even fit. That's my body right there.
next time I get you on, we're gonna talk some football and football season. Bob Kravitz is out in Indianapolis. My appreciation to him for incredible memories of Jim Irsay, and I didn't even bring in Rasig's little Bob dummy, which I now have back in my possession after Nacho Mama's closed down. So we still keep the Baltimore Colts flame burning around here, even if it's a Baltimore Ravens flame at this point. It's been 40 years, and for some people, they're not over it. I've been over it a long, long time, and I appreciate the history we have here. Bob Kravitz, Indianapolis Sage reporter. You can find him in semi-retirement out on Substack and on the interwebs. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.